All right, now it's on. All right. Good morning. I'd like to call the California Coastal Commission to order and welcome everybody to Oceanside. We'll begin by asking Ms. Miller to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Wickett.
Here.
Commissioner Bloom. Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Here.
Commissioner Burke. Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Mitchell.
Here.
Commissioner Norvell.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. And just for commissioners, I figured it out. The button on your right, if the mute button is red, your mic is on. If the mute button is turned off, your mic is turned off. Okay. So now let's go to the agenda changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, good morning. For the agenda changes, we'll start on agenda page 4, agenda item number 13A. This is 1-12-25, the Murphy item in Humboldt County. That's been moved to the consent calendar. Also on page 4, agenda item 14A, that's 1-11-39A. It's a Caltrans project in Del Norte. That's also been moved to the consent calendar. Moving to agenda page 5, item number 17A. This is E-12-005 and CC-027-12. The PG&E matter has been postponed. Also on page 5, item 17B, E-12-006. This is the Southern California Gas Company project in Goleta. Has been moved to consent. Again, on page 5, agenda item 18A, CC-056-11, the Sandag project has also been moved to consent. So those are all the agenda changes for today. A couple notes for folks who are here. If you want to address the commission, please complete a speaker slip. These are available at the table out in the front. You can provide that to staff, and they'll make sure it gets to the right place to get you in the queue. And also another note on cell phones, please either turn off your cell phones or put them in the quiet mode so that they don't disrupt the proceedings today. So with that, that'll bring us to the public comment.
Public comment. All right, thank you. So this is the time in our commission meeting for the public to make comment before the commission on items which are not on our agenda, either today or tomorrow. And each person will have 3 minutes. We'll start with Dennis Delzite, then Stephanie Sekich, and then Ace Hoffman.
Good morning. I'm Dennis Delzite, project manager for the Morro Bay Cayucas Wastewater Treatment Plant Upgrade Project. We've been waiting to get on your agenda for some time now, and we're making progress. Last week, Dan Carl and staff made a site visit, and it was a very productive meeting. At that time, Dan stated that our project will be on your November agenda. We're very happy about that. And I was able to speak with Dan and Charles this morning, and it's still on. So thank you very much. We're very much looking forward to that. We'll see you in November, and have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, just so there's no confusion, we are working very hard to have it on the November agenda. We can't guarantee that. So I just want to make sure that that's understood. I don't believe we promised to have it on the November agenda.
Right, but that's your goal.
That's correct.
Thank you. Stephanie? Oh, sorry. You are?
Ace Hoffman.
Go ahead.
I listed next. I'd like to thank you for allowing us an opportunity to speak. And I would like to speak about an item that's been pulled, which is the seismic testing, both for PG&E and for San Onofre. The purpose of the testing is to permit these two reactors to continue operating.
Hold on a second. We got a newbie here working the time thing. Okay, so. And then you have to go. All right.
Okay, now we're going in the right direction. The seismic testing for both of these plants is ridiculous because both of the plants have many other problems which could affect our coastal community. The spent fuel that's piling up there, we've got, 4 million pounds at San Onofre and another 4 million or so at Diablo Canyon. There's no solution to the waste problem, and if you've been following that carefully, there's not going to be a solution soon because we spent 20 years and some $60 billion trying to study Yucca Mountain, and that was rejected. Then the Blue Ribbon Commission tried to come up with a plan, and they're not able to come up with anything that's any better. All they're thinking about is trying to find a couple of waste storage locations around the country that'll take our waste, and that's not looking very good either, so it's just going to continue to pile up. So we have a waste problem at both reactors that will turn into or could turn into a spewing water polluting problem that you need to concern about. And then, of course, there's the once through cooling, which the reactor companies have both said it's too expensive to build a once through cooling system, so you're not going to need the reactors for that. Regarding the seismic testing itself, one of the activists said that they are for it because they want it to be done once and done right. And unfortunately, seismic testing cannot do either of those things. Because as soon as there's an earthquake, all of the pressures underneath the ground are shifted and changed. And so you would have to do the seismic testing again. And the other reason it won't work, being done once and done right, is you can't do it right. The seismic testing is a very small piece of additional information that we're going to get. At least as useful as taking a look back at the historic record of tsunamis that have gone higher than the top of San Onofre's lighted domes up on the mountains behind that. Those are the kinds of things that we can look at as proof. We can look at the historic record. We don't need to do this seismic testing for four reactors that we also don't need. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Stephanie Sekich? And then we'll hear from Donna Gilmore. Go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Stephanie Sekich, and I am the California Policy Manager for the Surfrider Foundation. I, too, am here to talk about the seismic testing project. Next month, you'll hear PG&E's application, and it may seem like you have a very difficult decision before you. You seem like you have a trade-off between nuclear safety and harm to marine life and ocean users. And believe me, Surfrider Foundation and many organizations went back and forth about the safety issue and how much we were going to involve ourselves in this issue. Myself and other people spent countless hours researching, and it became crystal clear to us that we had to come out in opposition against this project. PG&E recently revised their project, but quite frankly, the project has not changed significantly, and neither has our position on the project itself. Briefly, I'd like to illustrate why Surfrider, thank you, is opposed to this seismic testing. One, we are gravely concerned about the impacts to the ocean ecosystems. You know, seismic testing is equivalent to a bomb going off for 15 seconds, 24 hours a day, for days on end. PG&E's environmental impact report says that there are significant and unavoidable impacts to marine life there. They also go as far in their takings analysis to show that thousands of marine life will be harassed and possibly killed. Surfrider is gravely concerned about the impacts to the newly developed marine protected area. I mean, we spent decades trying to get that in there, and this is definitely going to impact that. Once again, PG&E says their revised project will not have an impact on that, but that's not true. We obtain maps that show high decibel levels will reach that MPA. Surfrider is very concerned about the impact to ocean recreationalists. Quite frankly, I dug for about 2 months trying to find if there was any impacts to ocean users. They reference it in their EIR. That information was not clear to me. I called Coastal Commission staff for clarification. Your staff had to then turn around and request more information from PG&E, and then it was only a lot later that Surfrider got a map showing that high decibel levels will reach areas where people recreate. And just to be very clear, the Navy uses 145 decibels for a threshold for safety for humans, and PG&E's maps show, which I have provided for you today, that decibel levels could reach up to 160 where people are recreating. And finally, and I think most compelling, the reason why we're opposed to this project is that the more we started to dig, the more we started to realize that experts do not want this project and they question the overall value. A former PG&E geologist and a current USGS geologist have said that this testing is only going to marginally improve what we already know. There's decades of data that are already out there. We're very concerned it's not being synthesized to paint a full geologic picture of what's happening there. finally, in closing, Surfrider does not believe this project is worth the trade-off. We do not believe that PG&E has demonstrated that these tests are warranted. A couple weeks ago, Surfrider launched an action alert, and over 2,000 people have sent you letters, the Coastal Commission, asking to deny this project. I hope that you will consider our comments today and the correspondence from thousands of people as you make your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Donna Gilmore? Oh, sorry. Billy, would you like to address the commission? Excuse me, Ms. Gilmore, we have...
Actually, I'd like to address the audience. As you're using the podium mic, make sure you're as close as I am, because as soon as you back up, nobody can hear you. Follow that? Okay. Thank you.
And the reason that's so important is that we don't have a court reporter, so what's being recorded is the official record of the commission proceedings.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Donna Gilmore. I live in San Clemente, California, a few miles from the San Onofre nuclear plant. I manage the website called sanonofresafety.org. That's a fact-based site of information having to do with San Onofre. And in doing research on this issue, it looks like it's determined from the experts that there is no valid reason to do the seismic surveys. There was Nora Jones, a Pasadena USGS geologist, she said that there is no way to measure the magnitude of an earthquake for sure, because the Earth's crust can change after an earthquake starts. I don't know if that's clear or not, but that was shocking to me. We already know we have earthquakes off both nuclear plants that are already up at a high seismic level, predicted 7.5, 8.0. And now we have Nora Jones, one of the expert geologists, seismologists, saying that we don't know how to measure it is, because after the earthquake starts, the earthquake changes, it could be a whole nother level. So we already have known earthquake faults that these plants are not designed to handle. So there's absolutely no valid reason to hurt any kind of marine life or have any impact on the coastal. This study is totally unwarranted. And if you're concerned about that we need the energy from these nuclear plants, I've given you a handout showing California, according to CPUC data, we have a 40% surplus of power in California without nuclear plants. And in addition, our electricity grid operator, the ISO, they have plans for next year to get through the whole year without San Onofre. And San Onofre is considered by the ISO to have been the only really problem area. Diablo Canyon isn't totally necessary to the grid area. And I've given you a document that gives you some of the ISO's information about that, what they're planning. And the CEC has also submitted a request to the ISO to plan for even the following year without San Onofre. And we had some of the hottest days of the year. It was like 103 in San Clemente, and it never gets over 80. So we had record high temperatures in this area, and nobody felt a blip. There was absolutely no problem without that nuclear plant. So I highly urge you to weigh the facts against, and please get your facts from other than Edison and PG&E, which I'm sure you will. And I've given you some handouts, information about the current problems at San Onofre. And if you want more information, you can check my website. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And Mary Beth Brangen.
Hello, I'm Mary Beth Brangen from the Ecological Options Network in, actually, West Marin. Hi, Steve. And I'm here to ask you to please very carefully consider the seismic testing issue. It is an absolute travesty in the making and totally unnecessary. I think the previous speakers have pretty well covered all the information that you need to have to make a well-considered decision about this, and we urge you to please not allow this devastating testing to occur. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that's the end of our speaker slips, so we'll go back to staff for North Coast. North Central Coast.
Yeah, had me confused there for a second. North Central Coast. So item number 5 is the Deputy Director's Report. We are reporting 3 waivers and 2 immaterial amendments today. I'm not aware of any objections or controversy regarding most of these items except for one of them, which we're going to highlight. We received an objection for immaterial amendment application 2-08-020-A1. The original permit allowed for a series of soil nail walls and revetments to protect 2 apartment buildings in Pacifica. It also specified that a pocket of riprap located in the mid-bluff area be removed and replaced with an engineered vegetated soil area covering approximately 2,000 square feet. Permit also provided for that same area to instead be covered with a soil nail wall if the vegetated slope concept proved infeasible, subject to a permit amendment. And so this application is that amendment request. We evaluated the materials that were submitted by the applicant, and staff, including the commission's senior coastal engineer and geologist, concluded that the vegetated slope wasn't feasible in this case, and that a soil nail wall in this area is necessary to ensure bluff stability and protection consistent with the commission's original permit. So the original CDP both provided for this option and mitigated for it, including in terms of it counting towards the required mitigation package. Thus, we notice this item as an immaterial amendment. As indicated, we received an objection, which is in the DD's report. The objection raises questions about the amount of rock to be removed from the area in question and makes a series of observations about certain aspects of the approved project unrelated to the area in question or the amendment. The objector has also submitted materials outside of the objection period regarding other issues associated with the commission's original project, but not so much specific to the amendment in front of you. In short, we don't believe the objection raises any issues relative to the amendment that would change our initial determination that it qualifies for immaterial, and we continue to believe that the determination is appropriate. Thus, we're looking for the commission's concurrence on this item and the other items in the DD's report.
Thank you. Is there any unwillingness for concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's nothing on the consent calendar, so that brings us to the Central Coast District. And in that Deputy Director's report, we have 2 waivers, 2 extensions, 2 immaterial amendments, and 1 emergency coastal permit to report. And I'm not aware of any objections or controversy regarding these items, so we're looking for the Commission's concurrence.
Any unwillingness for concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't have anything on the consent calendar, so that'll bring us to the local coastal program calendar. I believe Dr. Lester.
Yes, Madam Chair, before we get to item 9A, I did want to essentially trail the rest of the agenda and pull up an item from the Executive Director's Report 25, and you should have in front of you a one-pager summary about LCPs, but we wanted to have this discussion before we went to item 9A, which is a time extension for an LCP matter. And this is a follow-on to the discussion we had last month at the September hearing. Last month we had a discussion about time extensions and the staff's practice of recommending that LCP items that need to be time extended be extended for up to 1 year in order to provide the maximum flexibility to the staff in order to manage the workload and competing priorities. And we had a discussion about the pros and cons of that, including what the commission expressed an interest in seeing in terms of the larger picture in order to better understand that situation that we have to deal with usually monthly. And in fact, we have 4 time extensions on the agenda this month. And we talked about how the commission would appreciate seeing the larger context of what's pending in order to understand that workload management issue. And so we wanted to bring you some information as quickly as we could in order to provide that before we got to the next time extension. And so we've done a couple things. One is the chart in front of you, which I'll talk about in a second. And then the other thing, which you may have seen, is we've tried to provide more detail in each of the 4 reports that you have this month, two today, I believe, and 2 tomorrow, about the particular circumstances of each of those time extensions and when we anticipate bringing those back and what the issues are with those time extensions. So hopefully that will give you a little more comfort with the staff recommendation on these time extensions, but we wanted to have this discussion first in order to talk about those issues. If you look at the chart that we handed out, and this is approximate data. This is what we could pull together based on the system we have now. And you may recall last month I mentioned one of the things that we're actively working on now is upgrading our IT system so that we can do a better job of tracking all of the information that we have to deal with, including LCP items, permits, appeals, locally pending actions, et cetera. And so, you know, in the long run, our goal is to have a much stronger capacity to provide this information both to ourselves and to the public in a more transparent way and be able to systematically track the items that are pending before the commission. So this data is based on the systems we have in place now, which are a combination of digital and paper systems, that some of which date way back. So the numbers are approximate, but if you look at this table, you can get a sense of what's actually pending currently in terms of our LCP planning workload. And so the table is organized by the six districts. And then in the columns to the right of each district, you can see the number of LCP planning items pending in various categories. The first column is labeled submitted and filed, and these are LCP amendments that have been formally submitted to the commission by local governments and that have been reviewed for completeness under our regulations and are now filed and pending. And so these are the items that you really have to act on before the statutory limits expire. And in the case of both LUPs and IPs, those statutory limits are 90 days and 60 days, and that's why we typically have to extend these, because we can just physically can't complete the work on many of these within those time frames. If you look at that column, you'll see that all the districts except North Central have filed LCP amendments, which means those are actively pending before you and will be coming to you over the next year. San Diego in particular has a particularly pressing issue, as they have 17 LCP amendments that need to be acted on soon, many of them soon, and again in the next course of the next year. The next column is those LCP amendments that have been submitted to us that we've reviewed for filing and that we've requested information on, and so they're technically not filed yet. They're incomplete and pending. Some of those have been pending longer than others, likely, but many of them are ongoing in the sense that we're working with local governments to try to bring forward the information necessary to evaluate those LCP amendments. You can see there's 30 of those pending statewide. There's a couple that we've identified that are right in that window where they've come in the door and we're actively reviewing them, but we have not sent an incomplete letter or filed them yet. The last column before the total column, pending locally, I wanted to highlight because one of the topics we discussed last month was how to triage and prioritize and make the decisions about what's pending and how difficult it can be to manage that. These are a summary of the LCP amendments that we've identified recently that we believe are pending locally that are not yet submitted to the commission. And so these are things like the Mendocino Town Plan that you heard about last month on the field trip that the local government's actively working on, and in many cases we are trying to coordinate with them and provide our input as they're pending locally, but they are not yet submitted to us. This list of 71 you see here includes many what are being pitched as comprehensive updates. So we've got comprehensive LCP updates underway in Marin and Sonoma and Humboldt counties. We've got the cities of Morro Bay, Half Moon Bay, Daly City, Trinidad, all working on what they're characterizing as comprehensive LCP amendments. These are some of the LCP items that we've been trying to do an improved job in coordinating with local governments on earlier in order to anticipate issues and make sure that when they do come in the door, that we have less disagreement and we've narrowed issues and done our best to figure out how to solve whatever issues may be involved. It's very time intensive in order to do it as best you can, and depending on the local government, it can be really time intensive. Many local governments have series of local hearings, issue by issue, where we are asked to participate and we do our best to do that. But there's a tension between this column, the pending locally, and the submitted filed column. And the bottom line is we have to deal with things that are here and filed and need to be heard at the same time that we're trying to participate with things that are not yet here yet. And as you can see, if you look at the chart, it's interesting, you know, pulling together some of this data, the total numbers of pending is down to about 70, but that's half. Another half is pending locally. And so in terms of the workload that we're trying to manage, there's roughly an equal weight of what's here and that also what is not here yet, but that is important for us to participate in. And so we're constantly trying to make those kinds of trade-offs. Some of the other amendments that are pending locally are also new LCP submittals. So, for example, we have had a conversation with LA County about getting the Santa Monica Mountains portion of their LCP certified, which is a significant workload item for us in our original jurisdiction still because it's not certified. That's a very important LCP to work on, but it's not here yet formally. So in order to do that, we need to take time away from things that are here in order to spend time working with LA County to try to get that as right as we can before it gets here. So I wanted to highlight the overall picture for you there and the numbers. I also wanted to mention it's summarized up above the table, but in terms of the scope and the scale of these, all but three of these LCP amendments are major, what we call major amendments. So that means they involve some sort of more complex change in the type or location or intensity and density of use in a current LCP. That's the amendment being proposed. A minor LCP amendment is one that doesn't raise any significant change like that, and we can process readily quickly. So you often see those and have acted on those within the 60 or 90 day time limit because they are minor. So most of these are major, many of them are complex, and there's quite a few. Now that's the LCP workload, and I don't have any tables for you on the other pieces of workload that our analysts work on, but recall that analysts are also, at the same time that we're managing these LCP items, working on a permit load, original permit jurisdiction, and don't quote me on these numbers, but approximately 80 to 100 pending items per district in terms of the permit load is what we have in the door right now. So add on top of, for example, you know, San Diego is dealing with 17 filed amendments. They also have about 70 to 80 permit items pending in that office that need some sort of attention. Of those, about some proportion are active appeals, and if you look statewide, we have about 100 or more appeals pending in front of the commission. Those are appeals that have either been filed and are waiting some sort of review, the commission has found substantial issue and we're waiting for more review, or they're actively coming forward to a hearing. So those two items are in addition to the LCP items. On top of that, one of the major obligations of the staff in each of the districts is to monitor what's happening locally, and those are the local CDPs that are issued. If you look at those numbers, and they are, I think I reported in May, those numbers are down overall, as are all permit numbers with the economy, but if you look at 2011, those were coming in on the order of 75 a month statewide. So statewide, we're tracking on average about 75 locally pending CDPs in order to assure that those CDPs are being issued consistent with LCPs and whether to recommend filing an appeal or not. So that's another workload item. Finally, I wanted to highlight one other category, which is condition compliance, which is usually something you hardly ever see. From time to time, you will get a condition compliance item into a hearing, or you'll hear about it in public comment. So for example, the Malibu Lagoon restoration project, which you heard a lot about in public comment, that was a huge condition compliance workload item. So our staff had to spend a lot of time just trying to work through those issues and getting that permit issued and then complied with as the work was being done. Other examples would be Lawson's Landing. Once the action was taken, there was a lot of work, and there still is a lot of ongoing work on getting the applicants to comply with those conditions that the commission adopted there. The Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Plant is another example. Those are big items, but every other permit that you act on usually has some kind of condition compliance work attached to it also, like a recorded document that needs to be reviewed, or final plans, or some sort of document that needs review before the issuance of the permit, and then possibly something that has to happen prior to construction and then ongoing monitoring. So I wanted to give you that, paint that a little more detailed picture of the workload that the analysts are working on. And then if you look at the analysts that we have to do that work, currently we have about 27, 28 line analysts statewide dealing with this work. So I haven't done the math on that, but that's, you know, if you divide that workload out over those analysts, it's a lot of work per analyst. We do have supervisors and managers that necessarily have to chip in and do help out with that load. But right now, as I said last month, the bottom line, I think, is you do not have the resources necessary really to do the job that we would all hope to be able to do on this kind of work, especially the LCP planning. Now, we are going to have our local government workshop in December and continue our dialogue about the LCP process, and I anticipate that many of these kinds of issues will be part of that discussion. And one thing you should be thinking about as we get closer to December is this tension between what's pending and has to be acted on now and what's coming, and how can we work on mutual communication processes and procedures to facilitate the front loading more. And that's really what we've been talking about with the League of Cities and CSAC, and how to make that planning process more effective earlier. And that's going to be one of the major topics of the December workshop. So I wanted to frame that out and give you that overview and take any questions or have discussion about that topic before we got to Dan's LCP time extension.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Mitchell.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for this. I really appreciate the staff time that went in putting this together, and you know, the transparency that I think we're all of the commission was trying to achieve by this sort of conversation going forward. I have to say the San Diego, the large number of LCP amendments that are in San Diego says to me clearly that we need to shift some resources to address those, because it's so disproportionate to kind of the rest of the other LCP amendment. So I'm sure that something will be happening with regard to that. And again, on the time extensions, it's disappointing, obviously, to me, from someone who works in government, that you know, we can't meet the statutory deadlines, and so we have to extend. I obviously think that that's one of those things where government gets a bad rap. And again, this has been my concern, and with the Coastal Commission, is that people feel like, you know, the public feels like they're being delayed. I want to commend staff, however, on making this a two-day meeting. I think that, as I've said before, you know, the ability to, I realize that the agendas are set in advance and things come off, and, you know, the PG&E item would have been a day long, et cetera, but making this a two-day meeting, because of the limited staff resources and the limited time people have, if the staff doesn't have to spend an additional day here so we can manage the agenda so that it's only a two-day meeting when we really only have 2 days worth of work, instead of spreading it over 3 days and having, you know, 12 hours worth of tours. I think, you know, really addressing that is important. And, you know, I think the tours are great, but, you know, we often stretch these meetings, and I don't think that that's necessary, and I've said that from the beginning. And I've never gotten a response as to why we have to do the day-long agendas and items just can't be trailed, and that we can somehow compact it. So, again, that our valuable staff resources aren't spent, being in Oceanside for 3 days instead of two, and they can go back to their offices. But I really, I do really appreciate this and the transparency and, you know, the information going forward, so that we can feel like, I know that I can feel like when someone comes up or when a request is made, that, you know, time extension is less time. We know what the competing priorities are and where things are going. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. I wanted to say thank you very much to Dr. Lester. I think you've responded exactly as we requested in terms of the information that you've given us. I think that this will give not only the commission but the public and the affected local jurisdictions a deeper understanding of the context that their applications fit into. So just thank you very much.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Yes, I want to thank you too, Charles. This is helpful, I think, for our whole commission to understand the context in which these extensions come to us. What it's saying to me, though, is that we have a systems problem. I mean, you know, I'm looking at this and thinking, this isn't something where just working hard you're going to dig out of it. This doesn't look like this has got an end in sight. And so I think that it involves a re-engineering or redesign, some systems analysis to help us figure out how to cope with this. And I don't have that solution to propose. I wish I did. But what I do think is that if there's that many LCP amendments, could we look for someone to help us evaluate, are there trends, or is it the sea level rise thing sort of washing over 37 different LCP amendments, and each one takes it differently, where if we were somehow able to bundle up ideas and get them moved out more effectively, that we could make this process work for the Coastal Act, but also work for our staff, and therefore work for the applicants, who is we're really working for all of us. So I'm going to encourage us to say this is excellent information. We ought to be continuing to evaluate what to do with it now, as opposed to just realize we're in a swamp and we're never going to get out. And then just secondly was a question, the workshop for the coastal counties in December, do we have dates for that now? Or
yes, I was going to speak about that later also, but it's targeted for the Wednesday of the December meeting, which I think is the 12th of December.
Okay.
But that morning of the Wednesday.
Thank you.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to Oceanside. Welcome to San Diego County. I am the only representative for San Diego County. We used to have two, and I dearly wish that we could have two. But I also understand very well that we all represent the entire state, and I really appreciate it when we are able to get together and, you know, as a commission and look at everything as if it was our own area. So I certainly do appreciate that. One of the things that I've been doing as a council member, and of course we're a little freer as council members to work, you know, through, you know, SANDAG and through, you know, through regional, is to talk about what some of the issues are countywide. And I believe that especially in the last 6 months, maybe 6 months, 6 to 8 months, that we've gotten a lot more streamlining going on. I have worked with staff and have gotten lots of kudos from those working through the process about, you know, we understand the cuts. And if anybody has the solution, I think everybody from every level of government would love to hear what that solution is, because we are losing staff. We are having to kind of come up with a different way of doing things because, you know, the pension costs and everything else. Some cities are doing quite well. Some other cities are not doing quite well. I think that it's something that we all are going through. I want to commend staff. Absolutely. I've been able to serve for 3 years, a little over 3 years, and I think that they've been doing a great job. That when they, you know, they push and push, and I know that they've been, staff has had suffered some cuts, and you know, you got less people doing more work. I know that these are the LCPs are a priority. We've discussed with staff certain things, like for example, Caltrans ends up hiring someone that is actually placed in with the coastal, who ends up being able to assist. Now, that's someone that has experience and that can jump in and do those kind of things. I don't know if perhaps some of these larger projects could, you know, do the same thing to help get that through a little faster. In terms of staff, though, you guys are doing a great job. I appreciate it. I want to give you the kudos I've been hearing since Chula Vista's Bayfront, that they are just ecstatic. They are absolutely ecstatic that, you know, they were able to get that through on a first-time submittal to the Coastal Commission on a huge report that had lots and lots of, you know, it was a very, very complicated project. And I believe that a lot of that had to do with things being worked out beforehand. They came together as a community that was the business community, the labor community, the environmental community, the civic community. I mean, there was, by the time it got to us, there really wasn't a whole lot to say because staff did such a great job. So I appreciate, you know, that this is an ongoing dialogue. But certainly it's not a dialogue that is unusual. It's a dialogue that we talk about at city councils and, at the county. How to get as much done for the public, because we're public servants. How can we get maximum amount of things done, product, when, you know, we're having to deal with smaller and smaller staffs. I think that Dr. Lester has been doing a great job, and I know he takes everything that we say and looks into it, much like a scientist does. So I just wanted to say those words. I'm really appreciative, and from what I'm hearing, I think that they're even looking at the Chula Vista model as a model, Chula Vista Bayfront project is a model that perhaps getting a lot more of that to happen beforehand may make it even easier for staff to just, you know, well, not just, because as I said, it was a very complicated project, avoid kind of things that end up taking more time. But I think everyone's really excited about what happened in Chula Vista. I'm speaking for San Diego County, of course. What happened with Chula Vista and how they were able to get the entire community behind this. And I don't know if you remember or if you know, but the project before that was highly controversial. It was Gaylord. And they were able to get through that and come to the table and present something that was that we all could really feel great about. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Wickett.
Yes, I would just again like to thank Dr. Lester and staff for defining the challenge or the issues or problem as outlined in the LCP planning item summary before us. And I'm curious if this is a larger backlog than we've had in years past. In other words, with reduction of staff or just other challenges of the time, if this is growing or not. And then I'd just like to support Commissioner Kinsey in his comment that now that we understand what the challenge is, I would like to start thinking about solutions and a strategy for approaching it and how we can become more effective and more efficient in dealing with all of these matters without losing the quality that staff so much cares about and the commission so much cares about. And so that's just putting it out there for all of us to consider as a next step and how we move forward here.
Yes, thank you. I did want to respond to Commissioner Kinsey's comments about the systems also. In terms of the trends on this data, we haven't done any systematic scientific data analysis of that trend, and so it's a little hard to say. My sense is that it's a little bit of both. So, for example, in Central Coast, we had a huge backload of LCP amendments with Santa Cruz County 3 or 4 years ago. We made a commitment to reducing that backload. We set up a series of quarterly meetings with the county where we discussed mutual priorities, you know, which ones to deal with first, which were more important, and we reduced that backload. So you can see that number now in the Central Coast numbers that it's not what it was. On the other hand, other districts have seen an uptick in certain submittals, and in fact, looming in the Central Coast 19 pending is another round of specific ordinance amendments from Santa Cruz County. They're about to embark on updating a number of their ordinances, their hazards ordinance, the flooding ordinance, and various specific amendments that they're actively cranking out on now that are going to come in the door. So it's kind of ebbing and flowing. In general, with the staffing, I would say the workload has probably gradually and systematically increased in terms of a backlog, because some of that intangible that you can't measure because of the staffing reductions since the early 2000s. I mean, we've been overall reduced since the 80s. We had a little blip in the under the Davis administration when we had that a good couple of years in the budget, but then since then it's been a reduction, including the furloughs and sort of across the board cuts. So I'd say the workload problem has not decreased. There has been a little bit of a let up in some of the other categories. I mentioned the permit workload, although we have a backlog there as well. It's just that the volume is down, and at the local level it's down as well. I'm sure some of you have seen that. So it's a little hard to say systematically, but if you give me a little more time, I might be able to generate that data. On the systems approach, I agree completely, and you know, that's how I see these problems. It may not be apparent yet, but this is one of the things we have been trying to focus on, beginning with the workshop in 2009 and trying to put in place at least a dialogue with local government to talk about that aspect of the problem and what sorts of mechanisms or communication mechanisms we could put in place with local government to deal with some of these things, and that will be a continuation of the conversation in December. And we've been talking about orienting around what we're calling best practices for LCP amendment process. So, you know, what are the things we can do if you look at the process in the phases that actually occur, and how can we change our work behavior through those phases to facilitate better and more efficient outcomes? So that's one piece. The IT piece is a big component of it, and I appreciate being asked to bring forward this summary because it actually is facilitates something that I think we need to do. The first place to get a handle on things is to get a list, and then you can start looking at that list. And so even looking at some of the things that are pending, there are, for example, a lot of number of amendments pending that have to do with agriculture. And we anticipate having an agricultural workshop sometime in the spring, and that will feed into those amendments, ideally, in a way that, you know, if we can find the statewide resources to be able to have staff time to synthesize that work, then we can push that back out in a way that benefits more than one place or one jurisdiction. Another piece of that is the strategic plan that's going to be coming forward in the next several months. The LCP process will be a big piece of that, and there are a number of things we're talking about doing in terms of improving our information management and identifying what you called system changes that might facilitate streamlining or moving through the process more effectively in the strategic plan. So that will be an opportunity to talk about it. The funding piece I talked a little bit about last month, and I don't think you can ignore that, and that's a personal commitment of mine to, you know, depending on how things go this fall with the general state of resources in California, to make a push, and it's probably going to be a multi-year push, but develop a strategy to get support for LCP planning resources, because we, you know, no matter how many systems changes we make, you can't dig yourself out of this hole without more resources at bottom. Either resources or you let things go, and typically we don't let things go if they're important and need to be addressed under the Coastal Act. So we need more resources. You could double our planning staff today and begin to make a dent in this, but that would not be enough, I think. So that's another piece of the systematic approach. And then we are working with internal staffing, going back to Commissioner Mitchell's comment about allocating resources. We are looking at the options we have internally for moving resources to where the problems are, including a statewide function that would be able to look not at specific LCP amendments, but at issues, common issues, or, for example, a lot of jurisdictions will be updating a similar topical area in an ordinance, like facilitating second units. Those are the kinds of things we can synthesize statewide and then push back out in a way that is a model for other jurisdictions and can make it quicker for them when they get to that point. So we are thinking about it systematically. Obviously, there's a lot more to think about, and I look forward to everyone's input into that.
Commissioner Brandon, you had.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just be brief and wind it up. And Charles, I think I really do appreciate, like everybody said, the work that's gone in on this. And I think realizing that we're moving toward a workshop in December where I think, you know, local government could be a real help in lobbying to improve our situation here, not just 12 of us sitting up here, but certainly the local governments recognizing the exact same thing. I think how we come out of that workshop in December and maybe with the systems approach and kind of looking at that and trying to look at some kind of a way that local government can feel that they're partners in this too, I think their ability to lobby in their each individual jurisdictions would be a tremendous help. And sort of the movement coming from here, but also from there, I think would help tremendously. So, I'm not saying we don't need to capitulate and give in on where we're going in December, but I think that we recognize we have a huge opportunity to help solve some of this problem with those bodies when we get together. And I think that's what excites me most about it, is we can maybe make some headway for this commission at the same time. Thank you.
Commissioner Burke.
Charles, what I find really disheartening about this situation is that if the economy hadn't gone in the dumper, the amount of applications would have been probably consistent with the 2009 or 2010 number. And we'd have been in a hole which is probably four times as deep as the hole we're in now. So what I find troubling is the lack of a plan to get us out of this. Workshops are great, but maybe in these drastic times, and nobody knows, everybody's hopeful that the recession is ending. And I personally think it is. But I don't know how quickly this particular state recovers. And if it is in the mind of the legislature or the governor to increase our budget, even if it does come back. So I would think that we would be trying to assess what we really do here and reprioritize the things that we do, and maybe some of the things that we have been doing may no longer be able to be done. Now, I know everything you do is important, but in today's life, everybody doesn't get to do everything that's important. So I think the leadership of this commission and yourself are responsible for organizing it so that you can have a plan, that you can say to the public that this is our plan to get us out of this hole in a reasonable length of time.
Let me just respond quickly, and also going back to Commissioner Brennan's comment and Commissioner Sanchez's comment about local government. I agree, and that is partly what we hope the strategic plan will help us structure is what matters most in these times. And we can't do everything. We do have to make choices, and we are making those choices, but I think we need to do that more systematically so that we're not just making the choices of the moment that happen to get done or not. I see part of that plan and strategy as being the partnership with local governments because we do have the same fundamental problems, and LCP planning, even when we prioritize, we have a joint interest and mission in doing that planning in an effective way. But local government is hit as hard or harder than we have in terms of staffing and turnover issues. And so we have the mutual interest, strategic interest, in finding the resources to do that planning as effectively as possible. And so that is part of the dialogue with CSAC and the League and others. And I think we've begun to build that kind of relationship through actions like the Chula Vista Master Plan and working with the Port of San Diego and certain local governments when we've been able to more effectively find the resources and front load it. It's clear to everyone that that is what we need to do. It's just a question of finding the resources and then figuring out how to best allocate them. So I would agree with what you said.
Okay, I think the discussion on this particular item has wound to a close, so we're prepared to face our next time extension.
Okay.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
So with that lead in.
Sorry.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We should allow, I don't know if there is any public comment on this item, but.
Oh, thank you. I don't have any speaker slips. Is there any public comment on the item before us that Commission's just been discussing? Seeing none, with that, we will move to the next agenda item. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That does take us to item 9A. This is a City of Pismo Beach LCP amendment time extension. The amendment request includes updates to the LCP's land use and parks and recreation elements. The primary purpose of the amendment is to update the LCP's development standards, including bluff setback standards, as well as to update the parks and recreation element to reflect various projects that have been completed and to update the text. We haven't yet completed our review process, including coordinating with the city, but we have been coordinating with the city, and we are recommending that the commission extend the deadline by a year. We definitely expect to bring this amendment back before then, and we've talked with the city about a schedule that would bring us back in the early part of 2013, and we have concurrence with them on that schedule, so we're working toward that. But still, we're continuing to recommend the 1 year to allow for some of the uncertainties that we're all aware of and to ensure that we can have that flexibility in the coordination with the city. So the motion's found on page 2 of the staff report. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Motion. I move that the commission extend the time limit to act on City of Pismo Beach Local Coastal Program Amendment Number PSB-1-12, Part 2, to October 28, 2013, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, submitted.
Commissioner Brennan. Is there a need for a roll call on this? Is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the time extension.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That will bring us to item 9B. This is another LCP amendment. This is Santa Cruz County's nonconforming regulations. It's a proposal by the county to amend the LCP to modify the way it addresses legal nonconforming uses and structures. The proposed changes would replace the LCP's existing nonconforming provisions, but they wouldn't alter the basic LCP intent that allows repair and maintenance of nonconforming structures while requiring additions and major remodels to be made conforming. The county's objective with the amendment is to clarify and update the somewhat uneven current provisions while still ensuring that the nonconforming uses and structures don't inappropriately impact public health, safety, welfare, and the environment. Overall, proposed amendment refines and clarifies the LCP's approaches, the LCP approach to these uses and structures, and we think it should serve to effectively address potential issues better than the existing LCP provisions. It recognizes the prevalence of legally established nonconforming uses and structures in the county and provides a workable framework for their maintenance and continuation, as well as a process for bringing them into conformance when major changes or improvements are made. As noted in the staff report, the new nonconforming regulations are focused on zoning district development standards such as FAR and height, number of stories, etc., and they're not geared to nonconforming questions regarding bluff top and shoreline setbacks or habitat type of setbacks for rivers or streams or wetlands or that sort of thing. So we've discussed these issues at some length with the county, and we've agreed that these are best addressed separately for a number of reasons. Most obviously, as Charles alluded to, we've been coordinating and working with the county on a number of significant LCP amendments that should be coming to fruition in the near future, And these, to us, provide a more appropriate vehicle for addressing these kinds of issues, not just in terms of the nonconformities, but also just other development and redevelopment overall in relation to those resource and hazard sort of issues. So there are major updates in process currently for the LCP chapters governing coastal permits, geologic hazards, sensitive habitats, allowed uses, and procedures. So until then, the existing LCP will continue to address development, whether it's nonconforming or otherwise, in these areas in the same way that it has pretty successfully for a number of years. So we're recommending that these regulations be adopted as submitted, and we're in agreement with the county that there are remaining important issues to work through and on a number of fronts, and we're committed to that collaborative process with the county. And I know that Kathy Prevesich, the county planning director, is here if you have any questions or would like to hear what the county has to say. The motions and the resolutions, there's two because this is an LUP as well as an IP, are found on page 4 of the staff report. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, I do have one speaker slip, the planning director from the County of Santa Cruz, who's here to answer questions if anybody has any. With that, I will close the public hearing and go to Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a two-part motion. I'll start with part A. I move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment SCO-1-12, Part 1, as submitted by Santa Cruz County, and I recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Only briefly, I think it's been mentioned that there's been a lot of cooperation between Santa Cruz County planning and staff, and I just want to, as an aside, say that myself personally, as a local elected, have keep track of both City of Santa Cruz and County of Santa Cruz in terms of land use elements and what they're accomplishing, and recognize that they're really helping to push some of these issues into the forefront and for local government, too. So I want to thank them for those efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Zimmer, would you like to speak to your second?
Thank you. Just a comment and that harkens back to the discussion we just had in looking at this staff report and the discussion of the forthcoming LCP amendments that address in greater detail the bluff setback and those kinds of issues with respect to nonconforming structures. And I'm just wondering if there's a way to, since you're already working on this, if there's a way to try to transform what you do on this issue in this jurisdiction into somewhat of a template for a statewide effort, because it seems to me that while there's a great deal of variety in local LCPs and local approaches to specific problems, that this issue of what we do about nonconforming structures on bluff tops, for example, and when we consider that they have to reach the end of their useful life, and all of those regulations that we've seen pop up, maybe this could be one example of a situation where we try and take an individual effort and see the extent to which we can help it become a template for a statewide effort. Suggestion.
Yes, that's an excellent idea, and we've actually already begun that because this issue does come up in all of our urbanized eroding shorelines, and Sherilyn has a couple jurisdictions coming forward maybe in the spring with the same issues in their ordinances. I believe we've already shared some draft model approaches with Santa Cruz County. I'm not sure, we have to begin that dialogue, but and that was based on work that we've been doing in Southern California. So I agree that this is a common issue, and the commission needs to take a common approach. I still think it's amazing to me how much variety there is in local approaches to implementing a common approach can be implemented in a lot of very different specific ways.
All right, is there any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote on this? Seeing none, the commission unanimously approves the motion. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment number SCO-1-12, part 1, as submitted by Santa Cruz County, and I recommend a no vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Zimmer. Any unwillingness for unanimous no vote on this? Seeing none, we unanimously adopt. Okay, thank you.
Double negative. Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. That takes us to the North Coast portion of today's agenda. First item is the Deputy Director's report. We handed that out to you this morning. We're reporting to you two waivers, an immaterial amendment and a permit time extension. We've received no objections to the issuance of these, and so we're seeking your concurrence and the Executive Director's determination to issue them.
Thank you. Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Next is item 11, the North Coast Consent Calendar. As Dan mentioned earlier, items 13A and 14A have been moved to consent. We did provide you with an addendum for both of these items that includes some corrections and condition changes. The recommendations with the addendum changes are supported by the applicants, and we've received no objection to these items being on consent, and so therefore we recommend that you approve the North Coast Consent Calendar today.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on the consent items? Seeing none, I do have one speaker slip available for questions on item 14A. The will of the commission.
Move approval of the consent items.
Been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, submitted.
Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote on the consent calendar? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the consent.
Thank you. And now you're faced with your second LCP amendment time extension today. This is item 12A. This involves extending the time for commission review of an LCP amendment submitted by Humboldt County that would redesignate and rezone two private properties from rural residential to coastal commercial timberland. This LCP amendment was deemed complete on August the 16th, and without an extension of the deadline, this commission would have to act on this next month by November the 14th. Staff is recommending that the commission extend the deadline for action today because, again, we do need, as staff, more time to prepare our recommendation on this. Although we are expecting and planning to bring this back to you likely in January or February, although we are recommending that you extend it for the full year to give us some of the flexibility. Also, one unique aspect of the North Coast office is that we are planning a move, a physical move of that office, likely in December, and so we are anticipating there may be some glitches in that move, including perhaps some computer problems that we want to plan for, and so that's one of the reasons why we do need some flexibility specifically with that office right now. A one-year extension would result in the new deadline for action by this commission of November 14, 2013. The motion is found on page 3 of your staff report, and we are recommending a yes vote.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none.
I move that the commission extend the time limit to act on Humboldt County Local Coastal Program Amendment Number HUM-MAJ-1-12 for a period of 1 year and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the time extension is granted.
Thank you. And that brings us to the energy and federal consistency portion of today's agenda. I do have one item as a part of my deputy director report. It is a de minimis waiver. Again, we have received no objection to the issuance of this, and so we're seeking your concurrence.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
Just a couple of comments about the PG&E seismic survey. I just wanted to let you know that we did agree at the request of PG&E that we are going to schedule that item for Wednesday, November 14th at next month's meeting. There have been some questions about the status of the seismic survey proposal associated with the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station. We're still currently reviewing that submittal. We consider it incomplete, and therefore we do not have a month scheduled yet for when we're going to bring that to the commission. And regarding item 15A, Mark Delaplane is going to give you some remarks about that.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. This is a reporting item. It's really a briefing by the City of San Diego. The Commission has federal consistency review of secondary treatment waivers. There's one left in California, the City of San Diego, and the last time it came before the Commission was 3 years ago in this room. There were some give and take between the Commission and the City. City had been also working on a settlement agreement with some environmental groups, Coastkeeper and Surfrider. And what they agreed to do, it was in the form of a commission condition, but the city had agreed at the time, and they're complying with that today, was to bring back to you progress that they've made on water reuse, increasing capacity of water recycling and water reuse. So what the item before you is a non-voting item. The city will be reporting to you on progress they've made on improving their reuse capabilities citywide. We don't know if there is... The waivers are good for 5 years. EPA approves them on a five-year basis. So we don't know if the city will be needing to apply for a waiver, but it's possible the matter could, again, come before you in a few years if they have applied for a secondary treatment waiver. If they don't apply for a waiver and they do upgrade to full secondary, then that wouldn't be a permit that the commission would be reviewing. So you may or may not see this matter again, but today is the city's chance to update you on their progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this item?
I do have one.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did receive an email that was dated October 8th from Julia Chun here, campaign coordinator, Surfrider Foundation San Diego chapter. She wrote that she's requesting that the commission send the City of San Diego a message that it cannot expect indefinite waivers for its NPDES permit, and it needs to come into compliance like all other major California cities. She's asked she's pointed out that City of San Diego needs to comply with the Clean Water Act to protect our coastal waters, and that the commission does not want to see the city applying for indefinite 301H waivers every 5 years. Recycled water study articulates environmental and financial benefits of offloading wastewater from Point Loma to create a new local water supply. How does the city intend to implement the recommendations contained in the recycling water study? The recycled water study fulfills the city's commitment in exchange for the previous waiver, but what will the city do when the current waiver expires? What are the next steps? Why does the city anticipate that it will take until 2035 to fully implement the recycled water study plans? Can't the plans be implemented faster so that the city will need fewer waivers? I did not get an ex parte from Marco Gonzalez. That was the only ex parte I received.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Wickett.
And I also received a similar phone call followed by an email from the same person, from Julia Chun at Surfrider Foundation, substantively the same message as was just reported.
All right, thank you. Any other ex partes? Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, received the identical email with the typo included. not a problem. Julia, from Julia on October 8th, exactly as reported.
Thank you. All right. Now we will open the public hearing, and we have a presentation from the City of San Diego Public Utilities, Marcy Stryer and Roger Bailey. And if you'd come forward and tell me how much time you'd like.
Good morning. My name is Roger Bailey, and I'm the Utilities Director for the City of San Diego. And if you would, we would appreciate 15 minutes for the presentation.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
First of all, I want to say thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you today. We are pleased to inform you that the city has successfully completed the comprehensive recycled water study, and you should have received copies of the final report back in July. We are happy to present that study to you in great detail and share the next steps towards possible implementation. The study relied heavily on stakeholder participation, including environmental groups, technical experts and participating agencies. It was an inclusive and participatory process that took over 2 years to complete. Joining me today to make the presentation is Marcy Steyer. She's a Deputy Director for Long Range Planning and in the Public Utilities Department and led the Recycle Water Study. Her presentation will be exhaustive to complete requirements of the condition placed upon the federal consistency determination when the Commission approved the modified permit for Point Loma. Marcy?
Good morning. Next slide, please. So the recycled water study, as you've heard, we entered into with two environmental organizations, Surfrider as well as Coastkeeper. It's obviously linked to the Point Loma wastewater treatment plant's permit renewal. In my presentation today, I'm going to provide you with a level of detail associated with what we analyzed in this study for both recycled water potable as well as non-potable. And the overarching objective of this study was to maximize water recycling as well as to reduce the amount of wastewater being discharged to the ocean. Next slide, please. So we've mentioned the linkage with Point Loma, and in exchange in this cooperative agreement for the two groups to support the modified permit, the city funded this two-year study, which was initiated in August of 2009. We received the EPA approval for the permit in August of 2010. Mark mentioned your consistency determination. The City Council acted on the study in July of this year, and we finalized the study and then submitted it to the Coastal Commission on July 31st. And the next permit cycle is in July of 2015. Next slide, please. So I'd mentioned this, that the objective was to identify ways to maximize reuse. It's important to understand that it's a 20-year planning horizon, so it goes out through 2035. So we looked at population, wastewater flows, and water demands. And to do something this complicated in terms of constructing a lot of the facilities that would be required would probably take a 20-year time frame or perhaps even longer. This was all associated with reducing ocean discharges, and then, of course, what was equally important is to have an understanding about what the implementation costs would be along with a schedule. Next slide. Next slide, please. So Roger had mentioned that it was a participatory process with a number of stakeholders, and it really was. So I led the city team. We had representatives from San Diego Coastkeeper and San Diego Surfrider Foundation participate in our meetings. There were representatives from the Metropolitan Wastewater Participating Agencies. Those are 12 water and wastewater agencies that are a part of the overall South San Diego County Regional Wastewater System. The city has an independent rates oversight committee, and those members are nominated recommended by the mayor and appointed by the city council, so they participated. And then we also had a representative from the San Diego County Water Authority. That's our regional water wholesaler. We had bi-monthly meetings, which were attended by the stakeholders. There were a series of technical workshops to refine five reuse alternatives, and the stakeholders did comment on 8 different technical memorandum as well as the final project report. Next slide, please. So for non-potable reuse, and this is what also known as the Purple Pipe System, or in San Diego County, primarily, or in our service territory, primarily use this water for irrigation purposes. We started off and had actually a concurrent study underway, and it was called the Recycled Water Master Plan, and we were looking at opportunities to increase usage, and we started off by looking at customers' demands. What we found out as a result of this initial initiative was that any effort that was associated with expanding the recycled water distribution system was relatively limited in terms of the amount of water that would be consumed. It was very expensive, and that the customers were really spread out, and it would require a lot of pipe for not that much payback. So that led us to look for increased opportunities associated with indirect potable reuse. And we looked at various reservoir concepts as well as some of our groundwater basins. In San Diego County, our groundwater basins are relatively small and shallow. We are still, the city is, has a number of initiatives underway to gather additional research. We're actually working in some of the basins with the USGS, but the basins are relatively small, and some of the yields are maybe between 2 and 4 million gallons a day. And I think that's important, depending upon where you're from in the state, to understand it's very different here in this region. So the next slide is a map, and perhaps it would be helpful for you to understand where the reclamation plants are. So I'll start off by pointing out where, whoops, this is not working, where Point Loma is, and there's a, see, oh, I'm kind of deficient, I think, in being able to do this. There we go. Oh. I can't make it work. Okay. So this shows you the two recycled water the water treatment plants that we have. There's the Otay Reservoir as well as our San Vicente Reservoir. Those are two facilities that we looked at. And then you can see the purple pipes are the city's infrastructure, as well as the black pipes represent wholesale agencies that we have agreements with that we sell them recycled water. And so we were looking at kind of our entire service territory about what I had mentioned previously about additional customers in addition to some of the reservoirs to put the water into once it's advanced treated. Next slide, please. So what we concluded with the Recycled Water Master Plan, which was a companion document that the City Council considered earlier this summer, that what we would continue to do would be to connect infill customers, so customers that were adjacent to the existing distribution system. We had pipelines that had been designed for several years that are in construction now, so we would complete that construction but not undertake anything further. We update our recycled water master plan every 5 years, and so the thought was that depending upon what happens with indirect potable reuse, what we will revisit what we do in the master plan in 2015. So next slide, please. So I'd mentioned the two types of indirect potable reuse that we evaluated, that there wasn't adequate information at this point in time, we felt, for groundwater recharge. And so we primarily looked at reservoir augmentation. We looked at two different reservoirs, the San Vicente Reservoir, which is in the process of being expanded by the San Diego County Water Authority from 90,000 acre feet to about 250,000 acre feet, and that construction will conclude next year. And then the Otay Reservoir, which is one of our most southern reservoirs adjacent to a water treatment plant, and it's not that far away from the city's South Bay Water Reclamation Plant. And that one I'll mention a little bit later. We do need some additional work performed to determine its applicability to indirect potable reuse. Next slide, please. So the details of the study, and we did have ultimately five reuse alternatives that was considered. The commonality of all of the alternatives is that we could divert 135 million gallons of water a day, wastewater away from Point Loma to new and existing facilities. And those facilities include the North City and South Bay Water Reclamation Plants, and then locations, potentially three different locations for new advanced water facilities in the airport, in Mission Valley, and along Mission Gorge. All the alternatives would lead to 106 million gallons a day of reuse. 18 is non-potable, so that was our existing 11 plus 7 more, and then 88 million gallons a day of indirect potable. The average daily Point Loma flow would drop to 143, and we would estimate that by 2035 those flows would be 278 million gallons a day, so that's a substantial reduction. And the main difference in the alternatives is the treatment capacity of the facilities and where they are ultimately constructed. So the next slide shows some cost data as well as benefits. So if we were to produce what is ultimately in this study, that's 96,000 acre-feet a year, and I converted the million gallons a day to acre-feet because when we talk about the cost of water, it's always in acre-feet. So it would be in 2011 dollars between $1,700 and $1,900 an acre-foot. The cost reflects the capital cost to construct these facilities of ranging between $2 to $2.2 billion. And then the annual operating and maintenance cost for these facilities is between $100 and $110 million. The benefit is that it creates a local water supply and reduces overall water supply salinity, because if you do advanced treated recycled water, the salinity is less than 50 parts per million versus our current imported water is about 500. Next slide, please. So the implementation factors are that we are concluding work on our water purification demonstration project, and we'll be presenting or finalizing that report this year and in discussions with a presentation to the mayor and city council next calendar year. The potable reuse regulations, we do have an understanding with the California Department of Public Health about the regulatory pathway for reservoir augmentation. There presently are not regulations for reservoir augmentation. There are for groundwater. Understanding what the regulations are from both the regional board and the state board, that is elusive at this point in time. Should we move forward with an additional permit for Point Loma application in 2015. Anything that we're doing with regard to reuse would be integrated with that. Obviously, this requires approval by the city's elected officials, discussion about the rate impact, and the stakeholders prior to the conclusion of the study engaged in a framework discussion about the cost allocation, but that's obviously very important to them. So the next slide. I'd mentioned that we're finalizing the water purification demonstration project report, which includes a lot of water quality data. We have a 1 million gallon a day facility that we've been operating for almost a year and a half at the North City Water Reclamation Plant. That first stage of the project would be about 15 million gallons a day to the San Vicente Reservoir. Associated with this recycled water study, we need to conduct additional facility siting. This is a very high-level study about identifying what the opportunities and alternatives could be. If we move forward, we really need to have a better understanding about the facility siting, and I'd mention that we were looking at expanding facilities as well as locations for potentially three additional facilities. So we need to do additional work this fiscal year. Our stakeholders would like to initiate additional discussion about the cost-sharing concepts. Next fiscal year, we would be preparing a financing plan. If there's integration into the Point Loma waiver process, that would also take place. And then I had mentioned that we need to do additional studies associated with the potential of this one reservoir adjacent to our Ochai Water Treatment Plant to have an understanding of would it adhere to the regulatory framework, because the Department of Public Health has criteria associated with detention time as well as the volume of water and dilution for advanced treated recycled water into a water body. And that concludes our presentation on the study, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Jill Witkowski, Mike Donjitz, Julia, this is going to be a challenging day for me, Julia Chun-Tether. You all could come forward and put your correct name on the record. I'd appreciate it. 3 minutes each, yeah.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Jill Witkowski. I'm the waterkeeper at San Diego Coastkeeper. As you heard already, San Diego Coastkeeper has long been involved with this issue with the 301H waivers in Point Loma. And we did actively participate in the process of putting together this recycled water study. We worked close with Marcy and her team and support the planning that's gone forward into this planned offload from Point Loma to really address how we can get away from having these waivers. We do have some plans, and the item today listed that the city was supposed to explain how the city intends to implement recommendations contained in the study. Marcy laid out some next steps that the city is planning to take and that the city council has given the city staff approval to go forward with, but the city of San Diego still has not made a commitment to move away from the 301H waivers. And that needs to happen. And the city council basically was enthusiastically accepted the study when it came forward, but there was talk that, well, we're not really sure if this is actually going to be implemented unless we have to. Unless we have to move away from 301H waivers. If we can continue to get these waivers, why would we spend this money? I'd like to ask you to send a strong message, a strong policy message to the City of San Diego decision makers that there needs to be a plan, a real concrete plan that the city has committed to, that the city will go forward and implement these improvements. That the city has a plan as of X date, we will no longer need 301H waivers. Mr. Delaplane said that we're unsure as to whether or not the city will come forward again with more waivers, but if you actually look at their plan, page ES19 of the summary, the executive summary, they've got little red bars showing future 301H waiver periods, and during discussions of the stakeholder process, they had initially said, well, why would we upgrade Point Loma until we offload everything? So that right now looks like it's 2035, that there's an unsaid kind of agreement that they will continue to seek waivers till 2035. I know that this long-term capital investment and planning takes time, and Coastkeeper is willing to work with the city, but we need a strong message from the Coastal Commission and a strong commitment from the city that the next time they come forward to Coastal seeking a 301H waiver, that we have a commitment that this is actually going to happen and that we are going to stop 301H waivers to the City of San Diego. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Nick?
Good morning, Commission. My name is Nick Dangus, D-O-E-N-G-E-S. It's a tricky one. And I would like to follow up on what Jill had to say. I'm also with San Diego Coastkeeper. I'm a student attorney there, and I am a law student as well. I moved to San Diego from Minnesota about 5 years ago. I fell in love with the ocean and the climate and everything about it. Water is not a huge issue in the land of 10,000 lakes. It's just there, a lot of it. Since moving here, though, I've gotten quickly up to speed in the last 4 or 5 years on how important water is here and how ensuring a strong, secure water supply is. Part of this, I would say, is a question of responsibility. I think it's disheartening that we are pumping so much pollution still into the ocean, and I think we are responsible for ensuring that we get Point Loma up to speed and we don't rely on waivers, that we comply with the Clean Water Act, and we get out in front on the environmental issues. Likewise, with 80% of our water imported, that's not taking good local responsibility for our water issues. Moving to IPR would be a great move, would be a wonderful opportunity for us to start moving towards ensuring our own local supply of good, clean water. Reliance on imported water is a risky bet. Earlier in the summer, I went out to a Water Authority meeting in El Cajon and heard the Bureau of Land Management discuss the Colorado River is certainly in a rather precarious position. With climate change increasing, all these various factors, to rely on imported water is a poor idea. So I would say that what needs to be done is we need to move away from the waiver and come into compliance with the Clean Water Act and move towards indirect potable reuse to secure our water supply and take responsibility for our coastal environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Julia?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Julia Chun here with Surfrider San Diego. Pardon me, I'm still getting over a cold, so hopefully I can get through this okay. So as Surfrider San Diego, we definitely support the recycled water study. We participated through the entire process and glad that it shows that large-scale IPR is feasible in San Diego and would like to see that become a reality. So we do urge you to accept the study today. Our primary concern is what happens from here, what happens with the next waiver periods and so forth. Just to give you a little bit of context, the city of San Diego currently faces a decision about whether or not to purchase desalinated water from Carlsbad. While many can argue it's not either or, San Diego needs both, that's kind of neither here nor there. But our concerns are that there's only so much money to go around and so only so much that ratepayers can handle with the increased costs from both desalination and implementing indirect potable reuse. And while investing in desalination will help with the water supply issue, it doesn't help anybody move away from the waiver situation at Point Loma. And with the limited resources available, the city needs to hear that meeting secondary is going to be required. While staff has been extremely supportive of this process, elected officials are only going to allocate funding if they know this is something that's absolutely going to be required and something that they have to do. Furthermore, San Diego deserves to have better than perpetual waivers. We're ocean enthusiasts. We use the water all the time. I'm speaking to the choir. Furthermore, OPRA requires that there be a consistent reduction in suspended solids. That's under the current waiver process that the city of San Diego currently has. They're operating under the definition of having those reductions during a single waiver period, and we would interpret the law to say that it requires consistent reductions across waiver periods, and IPR can help meet both of those goals. So basically, to summarize, it's the right thing to do. It creates a new water supply where it's direly needed, and it offers multi-benefit options. It's a multi-benefit solution. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Joe Giever, and then Marco Gonzalez.
Thank you, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Joe Giever. I'm the Water Programs Manager for Surfrider Foundation. And here to kind of support our San Diego chapter. As you probably know, this is the 40th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, and California can be proud of our progress towards meeting the goals of making our waters drinkable, fishable, and swimmable. But nobody disagrees that we still have a long way to go. And actually, it's a little embarrassing and kind of a black eye on our efforts that there are still wastewater treatment plants operating under waivers. From a historical perspective, since Orange County Sanitation decided to develop recycled water in order to eliminate their need for a never-ending waiver, the community has seen multiple benefits of recycled water supply and pollution reduction, and they're actually expanding now beyond what's required in that, what was required in the conditions of their waiver. Now, Morro Bay and San Diego are in the midst of similar circumstances, and while we're pleased with the IPR study conducted by San Diego, the actual recycling facility is yet to be permitted and constructed. We feel the next waiver should be conditioned on completing the project. We think this is reasonable and logical. Why do a comprehensive study if it doesn't lead to developing IPR and moving away from future needs to renew the waiver? And it's with actually consistent with the timeline for the project development that was so critical in Orange County waiver agreement so many years ago. It ensures that all the promises and studies actually result in action, but it didn't take 25 years in Orange County. You can do it much faster than what San Diego is proposing. So we greatly appreciate Marcy's presentation this morning and all the work to complete the study. But we hope this commission agrees with us that the ultimate goal is developing the recycled water as soon as possible, and that should be a condition in any requested waiver extension. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Marco Gonzalez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. Marco Gonzalez for the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation. A number of years ago, Bruce Resnick, who was then the Executive Director of Coastkeeper, and I was counsel for the local chapter Surfrider, we approached the city with the novel notion that we would not oppose their waiver. For us, that was a big step. And those of you who were here, whether on staff or on the commission, will recall when the matter came forward for the federal consistency determination, there were environmentalists who basically called Bruce and I sellouts. because we had worked out this deal to get this study done in exchange for non-opposition. Very different from in exchange for support. We will never support a waiver. But we recognize that spending $2 billion to upgrade a treatment plant at the end of the pipe to continue the paradigm of dumping this precious resource filled with suspended solids out into the ocean, it was just a bad paradigm. There will come a time when water is far too precious for us to simply treat it and dump it out into the ocean. And I think Orange County provides us a good example of that. Once you get past the yuck factor, once you get the rates stabilized, once you get the infrastructure there and everyone realizes how it works, you up your quantities to the point where that hallowed goal of completely eliminating dischargers actually comes into view. Now, we live in a world of carrots and sticks, and I know as well as others on my side that sometimes we have to sue people to get things done, and that is the ultimate stick that we wield, and thank God the laws would allow us to do that. But sometimes there are situations where the carrots are sweet and acceptable, and the elected officials actually come to the table. You know, this is always going to be an issue where we have to wield both the carrots and the sticks. So while on the one hand I would say thank you for the tough message that you sent when you approved the last federal consistency for the waiver and allowed the city to do this study as part of its conditions, and I would like you to accept the study and tell them that they've done a good job, I'd also like to echo the concerns of Surf Rider and Coast Keeper that we get a strong message that waivers will not be the paradigm of the future. And at the same time, we all have to recognize this is going to take some time. And if the city does, in fact, set some milestones and does move forward, they need to be given some assurance that we're going to remember where they came from, remember what they undertook. And if it means that there's a lawsuit settlement out there that says we're going to have two or three waiver periods in exchange for these concrete milestones, we're going to be able to get this agency on board as well. Obviously, we have the Regional Water Board, we have EPA, we have the Department of Public Health, and you. Under the Coastal Zone Management Act, you will be at the table, hopefully blessing whatever arrangement we can come to with them. And you know, if it turns out the city's recalcitrance at the elected official level is so high that we have to end up in litigation, well, we hope you'll be standing next to us saying, yeah, you're not doing the right thing. So thank you for accepting the report today, and we look forward to working with you towards a better future for the city. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing and come back to staff. Do you have anything to add?
No, not at this time, unless you have any questions.
Any commissioners? Commissioner Burke.
I have a question, Madam Chair. Wasn't this waiver denied the first time it came to the commission before?
Actually, in the two previous times the waiver has first come to the commission, there was an objection, a denial by the commission, followed by an approval upon a fairly quick resubmittal in both instances. So the commission has denied, but ultimately came back and approved.
Can you explain to me what happened because I voted for the denial last time. That's why I thought I remembered that. Can you explain to me what happened the month between, because we have an enormous amount of new members who weren't here when that took place. Can you explain to me what happened between the denial of that extension and its approval?
Well, the first time around, the two situations were actually somewhat different. The first time around, which was, I guess, 10 years ago.
No, just last time.
We had concerns about being able to justify the commission's action. And we agreed with the city that this could be subject to a rehearing, and they had a second chance.
We, meaning the staff.
The staff agreed to bring it back to the commission.
We, meaning the staff.
Staff.
Had trouble justifying the commission's action.
Well, we were looking at a likely appeal to the Secretary of Commerce. And we had concerns about how that was going to play out. We had concerns the previous round with the state and regional water boards expressing a lot of dismay at the commission's decision and somehow impeding on their turf. And we agreed to bring it back to the commission and give the city a second chance.
And what was your first recommendation?
The first recommendation was of concurrence, and the second recommendation was for concurrence. And then through the second hearing came out that this commission wanted to hear that the city was making taking these seriously, these efforts about increasing their...
I thought it was important that the commissioners know that even though there are some of us who are more pro-development than others, feel that this San Diego sewage situation is not acceptable. There's some things you can't do for money. And what they're doing because of the cost of this facility is not justifiable in any study that they agree to do or any future plans that they agree that they're going to do. It's unconscionable. It's been unconscionable for probably two decades. But I find it troubling that we sit here and we turn down a 90-year-old woman's stairs from her, she had them all her life, to the beach. But we allow the city of San Diego to continue this mass pollution of the ocean. So, you know, it's just a very difficult oxymoron.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2 years have really gone by fast. And I do recall the conversations that we had at the dais. I especially recall my own reaction, and that is that I believe that San Diego is the only major city that does not treat, you know, does not have tertiary treatment. And I know how important water is to San Diego. It's everything. It's the economy. It's a tourist destination, and clean water is so critical to the future of San Diego. It was my first time, I believe, on the hearing. It was 2 years ago, and so I felt very strongly that we just have to have tertiary treatment in San Diego. What was offered was pretty much a way of getting there when Marco Gonzalez and Bruce Resnick came forward and suggested, okay, we would like you to study this. What is it going to take? And I think that was it. What is it going to take to get San Diego, a city that we love so much here, to do tertiary treatment, that it comply with the law? And I understand it's the major stumbling block is cost, but we had hoped that, you know, with this study, we could see some process towards that. I see that, and I've heard that this study was done with people at the table, with the, you know, the environmental groups coming forward. And while they sound optimistic in terms of working together to find a solution, there is this, you know, I don't want to say pessimistic, but how, you know, when is this going to happen? Lawsuits cost a lot of money. And, you know, there's the people of San Diego will be the ones that lose during for that. It would be, and I have to agree with you, Commissioner Burke, it's unacceptable. But having said that,
every other city in the state of California has complied. Every single one. Cost them all a lot of money. Another thing about Marco.
Commissioner Burke, I'm sorry, but it is Commissioner Sanchez's time at the mic. But I'll put you down again.
Okay. But she asked me if I agreed. And I didn't agree.
You're
and this
agreeing.
Is why I didn't agree. Okay? So I have a little bit more, but I'll let it go.
Right. Well, and I guess what I was looking for in this report, and I'll finish so that, you know, because I would like to get this to go around again, is are for milestones. Are for, okay, what is it going to take? I mean, realistically, just laying it all out, you know, being as truthful as possible. I know these are hard times to even, you know, predict in terms of the economy and what we can, you know, what the community can afford. But what we know one thing, and that is the community cannot afford putting this off, you know, forever. We know that. So the question is, when? And I'll leave it at that for now, because I think Commissioner Burke has a lot more to say. Thank you.
As do some other commissioners who've asked to speak first. So I'll call on Commissioner Bochco.
Yes. I really appreciate Commissioner Burke and Commissioner Sanchez giving me some history of this, because I, you know, being very new, I didn't know anything about it. And it is very impressive that San Diego is the only city that doesn't have tertiary treatment. I wasn't aware of that, actually. It's kind of astonishing. When is the next waiver due to be voted on, or whatever that procedure is?
It looks like the permit would expire in 2015. There's often a multi-month, even sometimes several-year process before it actually gets to us as it's being reviewed. There's technical analysis done by independent experts. So soonest would be 2015, but it could be a little bit later than that.
And the purpose of what they just presented in terms of their research is to continue to find these alternatives that they will then present in 2015? Is that kind of the
timeline? Well, there's sort of a two-path effort. The ideal goal, if it could be accomplished, is to increase the reuse capacities enough such that there's less water coming into the plant and they can meet secondary treatment standards and don't need a waiver. Mm-hmm. The question really is what's the time frame for that? How quickly is it going to happen? How quickly can they assure themselves that they won't need a waiver? So to some degree, they're still considering a waiver as a backup in case they don't accomplish the reuse increased capacities quickly enough, but they want to pursue all options.
And since they're the only city in California that needs this waiver, do we have any inclination as to how feasible it is to get yet another one? I mean, has there been any conversations with the federal government?
Well, we are talking to EPA. Everybody is telling the city we would like to not process another waiver. We all get a black eye when it happens. We would like to get to secondary. Let's figure out what the best plan is to get us there and how soon. But each one of them gets analyzed at the time based on the standards in the Clean Water Act and, in our case, the Coastal Act. And we have to look at the facts as to what they are. And we will certainly absolutely look at any milestones, whatever, if there is another application. You know, some of the things that were discussed today do need to be spelled out in a concrete way that they will happen within given time periods.
Right. Well, the reason I asked that question is one of the speakers said, you know, they may go through this process, they have all the information they need, and then they run into a recalcitrant mayor or city council. And I just wondered what was the opposing pressures on that body that might make them be less recalcitrant. So I think you answered my question. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add what I think was implicit in Mark's original answer to Commissioner Burke, which is this is an area where we have shared jurisdiction with our sister agencies, the state and regional water quality control boards, including a specific provision in the Coastal Act that designates those agencies as the primary water quality agencies. And the commission is directed to not do anything that would frustrate that particular primary responsibility. That said, over the years, we've gone very carefully and worked as cooperatively and collaboratively with those agencies as we could to push forward the Coastal Act requirements that also address coastal water quality. But I just wanted to highlight that's relevant background context to this policy area generally, and is partly what Mark was explaining about the initial denial of the commission and then a revisiting of that action by the commission in the last waiver. It's something we always have to pay attention to when we're looking at actions where the regional board and the state board are involved.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you.
I too appreciate Commissioner Burke's recitation of the history and staff's recitation as well. And as a policy matter, I share the frustration, and I find it quite appalling that this glorious city is in this situation. My questions have to do with what tools are available to us. The item before us today is to listen to this report and to comment, I suppose, on whether or not they have told us adequately how they're going to implement the results of this report. Is that a correct understanding? I didn't see a motion even on our on the version of our report here.
Right. This is just before us as a briefing, as a status update, and you know, realistically, I mean, we will continue to be involved, but realistically, the next time I think this would come before the commission. For the commission action would be if there is an application for a waiver. Alternatively, we could provide progress reports or could ask the city to come back in an interim period or when a new mayor is elected, when it's appropriate politically, if the staff has concerns about they seem to be backtracking. I mean, we could bring the matter back for further discussions if it's appropriate. But at the moment, we think they are making good progress and there is a political will, and so we didn't see a need for an action, and under the condition that was brought that was adopted at the hearing, you know, actually really by the commission itself during the deliberations, you know, the city made it clear and the commission made it clear after some give and take that the city coming legally for what was before the commission at that time, that the city coming back and reporting to you as it has done today, even if they said, oh, you know, we changed our mind, we're not going to do anything about water recycling, they were simply saying, yes, we're going to pursue this, we're going to come back and tell you what we're going to do, but there wasn't a way to, or the commission didn't see a need to further condition it to put any additional teeth. They wanted the city to come back and report, and, you know, we get to revisit these every 5 years.
And in terms of our relations with the state and regional water boards, is there any mechanism for us to communicate with them? Do they have any authority to take any additional or different action to perhaps impose more specific milestones? And that's a question with respect to our ability to communicate that kind of desire or intention to EPA as well.
Right. I mean, our goal has always been, because of the legal constraints that Charles mentioned, our goal has always been as much as possible to try to work in concert with, coordinate with the regional board and the state board where possible. But the problem that we had when the denial came 10 years ago was the commission took an action. The regional board actually thought what the commission had done made some good sense. It had to do with reducing mass emissions. It wasn't you can't have a waiver, but it was more of a conditional milestones on mass emissions kind of approach. And the regional board thought that was a good idea, and they adopted it. And then we were happy because we had a regional board and the Coastal Commission in acting in concert. But unfortunately, then the city appealed it to the state board, and the state just read us the Riot Act and dismissed the action that the regional board had taken and approved the waiver, and we were roundly criticized for, you know, again, intruding on their turf, which we actually felt we hadn't done because we had acted before the regional board. So since that plan of acting before so that we couldn't act in conflict with a determination by the board hadn't worked, the second time around, the most recent one, we actually decided it probably made sense for the board to go first and then let's have the commission take an action. But we do work with them on a staff-to-staff level. We'll work with EPA. We'll try to figure out, you know, how we can build these milestones in. None of these agencies want to see another waiver, if that's at all possible. And if they do, they want to see milestones that are definite and enforceable.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark, appreciate those comments. I would only say that I do appreciate the speaker's concerns. For somebody that's a locally elected, it's been on the short end of votes of trying to reach in good times when there was money available in local government to make the right decisions and go forward. When you have waivers or other things that are on the horizon or are there as a, something somebody can point to, people are going to say, as long as that's part of the equation, why do we need to go down this road? So I think this body needs to send as strong a message as we possibly can and beyond it. That needs to be taken off the horizon and just needs to be eliminated, and then they will come to the table and make some decisions. And I appreciated Marcus's comments about the carrots and the sticks. I think what does happen, and it's happened in our city, unfortunately, is that we end up with the sticks dictating when we had the opportunity with the carrots to kind of make it more palatable for everybody. Unfortunately, the stick had to come along because everybody kept saying, gee, you know, we don't need to do that yet because technically we still have a waiver. So I think taking that off the table makes people sit down and look to the future. And I like what we heard here today was the people that are part of that process, which have the sticks in their quiver and can use it when they want to, are saying, maybe there's an opportunity for a waiver or two if we could see a whole plan coming forward, or that's for them to decide. But I think we need to send a strong message. And especially in these times now when money is available and at very, very cheap rates. I mean, people can, those bonds can be put out. We're doing the same thing in infrastructure right now. And I think you'll find that a lot of people, especially are looking to invest money in those kind of bond rates, especially in California. So we're finding that in our city. And I think by sending a strong message to this body, to San Diego, I think we're reaffirming what we believe in terms of the coast and the Coastal Act. Thank you.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. I want to thank the city for bringing the wastewater study forward in terms of reuse. I also think that the involvement of the organizations and the willingness to take heat from some of their peer organizations over being proactive is admirable, and I want to acknowledge that. To follow through on that, I do think our commission should join a parade of others that say no more. You know, it's reassuring to hear Mark say that that all of the regulatory agencies don't want to see another waiver, so that we shouldn't have to be put in that position the next time. But there's no guarantees. So we were asked to add strength to the importance of implementing behind this plan, and I think that we as a commission should do that. And, you know, we're not taking formal action, but I do think that there's a very credible study that's been done. It identifies two pages of checklist items to get from an idea to a reality, and that involves a lot of commitment and investment. But it also involves political will, and I think that the commission here should be strong and clear in our message that we want San Diego to join the rest of California in the way they treat their wastewater. Thank you.
Commissioner Wickett.
I just want to weigh in support of the other commissioners here that I think that there should be no more waivers, that the situation is not acceptable as it stands now, and that the city should just move forward to get into compliance, the same compliance that other cities in this state have on dealing with wastewater. I would put forth to the commission whether a motion to that effect might be even a stronger way of putting out our feelings in this matter, since this matter is technically before us now. So I would just like to encourage the commissioners now to consider what is the strongest way we can convey this to both the city and to the other regional body, government bodies surrounding this.
Madam Chair, yes. In response to Commissioner Wickett's question about a motion, this item wasn't identified as an action item, so a motion isn't appropriate here. That said, there can always be a suggestion from a commissioner or from the chair asking the executive director to write a letter communicating some of the thoughts that have been expressed here today, and that can be reported back to the commission.
And just to add, we'd be happy to do that if that's the sense of the commission, to send a letter expressing these concerns.
All right. Well, most commissioners have weighed in already, and there has been a fairly uniform position on this. So I'll go back to Commissioner Burke. And
you know, in football, it's called piling on, so I'm not going to do that.
Pile away.
Yeah, right. But I got a couple things I'd like to get straight. You said that we were concerned last time about the secretary getting involved. Which secretary was it? I forgot.
The Secretary of Commerce.
So we were willing to take on the Secretary of Defense over the whales, but we're not willing to take him Commerce on about San Diego. I don't quite get that, okay? Now, I've been here so long, I can't even remember how long I've been here. Been here too long, probably. But Mark's been testifying as long as I've been here, and sometimes I agree with him, and most of the times I don't. But this is the first time I've ever heard him say anything about a carrot. It's always been the stick. So it's very confusing to me that after probably 15 or 18 years, there's an amelioration of the desire and the drive to get this done. Last thing. All those people that got up here to testify about how nice the study was and how everything's working now, they wouldn't even been in the ball game. They'd have been somewhere out there with a picket sign if we hadn't stood up and said we weren't going to give a waiver the last time. Because I was just telling Steve a few minutes ago, if you think the environmentalists are strong in this state, things like Bolsa Chica, which is enormously important, you could build a high-rise building in the middle of Bolsa Chica, and you wouldn't get the reaction that we got when we denied that permit the last time. I have never seen anything like it, never experienced anything like it since I've been on this commission. So I wish everybody would join me in saying it's time to step down, but I don't want to put you on Front Street without letting you know that there's hell to be paid if you go that way. So, but it was a very effective way 2 years ago to bring them to the table so that these people could get up and testify today and say things are moving the right way. I'm Phil.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think what just about everyone has said is we will not, if given current situation, there will not be another waiver in 5 years. And actually it's 3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
Actually 2 years because the actual waiver ends when?
We don't want to say it that way.
At the end of this.
Just for clarification for the commissioners, and again, I know I stated.
Yeah, it's an intent. In other words, given a current situation, if it were to be brought today and nothing, this is the only action that took that happened, that is a study was presented and that was it, no implementation, no milestones, that the general intent here is that it would be denied. That I believe that's what could be said in the letter. I think that I would definitely include in the letter that that the report was accepted, that it was a good sign that they're working with the environmental community, but that there were things that are still left out and that should have been included in the report, and that is the implementation part. And that is a realistic table of a timetable of when this is going to happen and that it's actually going to happen. That's what I'd like to see in the letter. What I'd like to see is that continued working with the community, San Diego, with the environmental community to make it happen. Marco was just part of a kumbaya, just a couple of months ago, Chula Vista Bayfront. And he had said he had worked on that since he had left law school. So if that's possible, then this is possible too. So I see that there is this willingness to work with the city of San Diego, and but there needs to be, as Commissioner Burke said, a definite statement that there is no other city asking for a waiver. There's no other city needing a waiver. And this is a critical, critical issue for us. Thanks.
Commissioner Zimmer.
I would like to try to make a motion to continue.
You may not make a motion, I'm afraid.
Can I just finish my...
You may, finish but my, I believe
trying that. To, I'm trying to arrive at some sort of action that we could take that would be very specific and help us get where we want to go. If commissioners don't agree, that's fine. But my idea was that we continue this to... with direction to the city, indicating to them that their statement of their implementation plan for this report is not adequate, and to give them the opportunity to come back in an appropriate period of time with additional implementation measures and milestones.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Zimmer, while I don't believe continuing this item, since it's an informational item at this point, achieves what you're asking for, you may ask if the executive director can bring this back to reschedule an information item on this, mm-hmm. to come back, and there could be a suggestion for an action at that time.
I was going to second that motion.
May I suggest a different route here?
I don't believe that needs to be a motion. That can just be a request of the executive director, who then determines the future agenda.
May I suggest a different route to go to try and move us forward on this? As I say, almost all the commissioners have weighed in on this, and I have not heard any inconsistency on where the individuals who have spoken have their position. And I think the important thing is that the city of San Diego hear this quite clearly, despite the fact we have not taken, there's no action before us, and we can't take an action. So I would propose, unless a commissioner thinks it's not the correct way to go, that we ask our executive director to send a letter to the city of San Diego, which reflects what he has heard from the dais today. I think what we want them to do is to have a clear understanding of where this individual commissioners are, and that they seem to be fairly in a uniform position. And I think rather than having another hearing and another staff report and having the city come back, I think they just need to hear the message of where this commission, its current thinking. And unless there's an unwillingness or a belief that that's not a way to move us forward, I propose that that's what we do. Commissioner Wickett.
I would just like to agree with that, as so far that to me seems to be the most effective and fastest short-term thing we can do. And as part of that letter, taking again the thoughts that other commissioners have mentioned over the last several minutes, putting that into the letter, the unacceptability of the current situation, the fact that the city is out of compliance with the rest of major cities in California, and then also mainly asking for an expedited schedule to get into compliance, such that no waivers will ever be requested again.
Commissioner Mitchell.
I just wanted to weigh in, since I was one of the people who hadn't, and I agree completely with a letter and, you know, all the statements that have been made. Obviously, this is ridiculous, and we need to move forward and there as get off this waiver. So I would be supportive of the letter and whatever the commission decides.
Any unwillingness to move forward in that manner? Seeing none. Dr. Lester, I believe you have
yes,
direction.
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more item under the energy agenda, and that is item 16, the consent calendar. Items 17B and 18A have been moved to consent. For 17B, we did provide you with an addendum with a minor change. The applicants are supporting the staff recommendations, and we're not aware of any objections to these being on consent. We therefore recommend that you approve the energy and federal consistency consent calendar.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this?
No, but I had a question on one of the items.
Okay. So seeing none, we do have speaker slips. And all the speaker slips are in favor of the project, so I assume they don't object to these items staying on consent. If anybody does, please come forward. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and call on Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. Just a question on the addendum for Ms. Detmer. The nine locations have been deleted. Does that indicate that there would be additional locations for the borings?
I don't believe so. I think this is
okay.
The nine borings are related to where the current support structures are.
Yes. Okay. So then this will come back as a CDP.
That's
after
correct.
The testing. Thank you.
That's correct.
All right.
Move approval of the consent items.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the consent calendar.
Thank you. Yes, that brings us to the rest of the statewide agenda. And I am apprised that we do not have any approval of minutes this month under 19, which would bring us to item 20, commissioner reports.
Are there any commissioner reports? Seeing none. The Conservancy did meet. I was unable to attend, so Susan Hanch went in my place. I don't know if we have a report on that.
Oh, we don't have a report.
Okay. Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy did not meet. Okay. Santa Monica Mountains. I think we'll come back to them. Santa Monica Bay Restoration did not meet. Deputy Director General's report.
Yes, through the chair, commissioners, I have two items to report. The first is in...
Mike's not on.
It's on. I'm just probably not sitting close enough to it. Is that better?
Yeah.
It's my computer's in the way. And the first item is Westbridge versus California Coastal Commission. This was a case where the applicant, the Westbridge, had applied for a permit for a multiple lot subdivision in northern San Diego County. The commission had denied it on grounds that there were feasible alternatives, including based on a study done by the city of Encinitas's expert, and the trial court denied the petition for writ of mandate sought by Westbridge. So that was a good result in that case, and kudos to Deputy Attorney General Haley Peterson for handling that. And secondly, in Ackerberg versus California Coastal Commission, this is the enforcement action that the Court of Appeal ruled in favor of the commission upholding its issuance of a cease and desist order against Ms. Ackerberg regarding her access in the city of Malibu area. The court denied a petition for rehearing filed by Ms. Ackerberg, and my understanding is, having checked the Supreme Court website repeatedly this morning, I don't see a petition for review has been filed, so it looks like that matter is it will be finally concluded. And that's the end of my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Executive Director's report.
Yes, I have one item, but before that, why don't we take the legislative report from Ms. Christie.
Good morning, Commissioners. The 2011-2012 legislative session came to an end in Sacramento on August 31st. And as you know, the governor had an additional month to sign or veto the bills that made it to his desk. There have been a number of changes because of our mailing deadline. There are a number of changes to the status of those bills in this month's ledge report, which you may notice is a little shorter than usual this month because I've limited it to either the bills that the commission was tracking generally or the bills that the commission had official positions on. So that's why the report's a little slimmer now since it's the end of session. We did have a relatively successful year this year in Sacramento in that no bills that the commission opposed this year actually made it to the governor's desk. And all the bills that we had a support position on that did make it to the governor's desk got signed. That being said, there were a number of bills that the commission supported that did not make it through the legislative process, and so never got an opportunity for the governor to weigh in on. Most notably, that would be SB 588 by Senator Evans. That was the commission's administrative penalties bill. And also SB 568 by Senator Lowenthal. That was the bill on polystyrene, that the bill to prohibit polystyrene food containers in California. The commission did support that bill, and we tried to get that through, but we were unsuccessful in the last month of session. So with that, I'm going to go through and talk about the bills that did get signed between the mailing of this report and today. And the first of those is AB 1532 by Speaker Perez. That bill did get signed and chaptered, and that's a bill that creates the California Global Warming Act of 2012, and the late amendments of August 24th included as eligible projects for the funding source to include local and regional planning efforts, which in conversations with the Speaker's office is intended to include LCP updates should they meet the other requirements for those grant funds. So we'll be continuing now to work with the Air Board and the legislature to see whether or not there are local LCP updates, particularly those that deal with transit-oriented development, infill development, greening projects, and sea level rise that may have a new funding source now through the Speaker's bill. We're optimistic that we might get some assistance there. AB 1776 by Assemblymember Fong, that's the Western Pacific Leatherback Turtle bill that designates that as the state's marine reptile, and October 15th every year is the day to celebrate that. That was signed and chaptered, so we can look forward to that on October 15th in a couple of days. The commission did support that bill. AB 2005 by Assemblymember Garrick was a bill that we were tracking. It's a bill that provides some temporary relief to particular vessels that are participating in America's Cup with respect to the state's oil spill response program. That was because there were some unintended consequences from the initial legislation that would have kept some of the yachts out of San Francisco Bay. Nobody wanted to see that happen. We don't anticipate that there are going to be any oil spill-related problems with that, so we did not take a position on that bill. AB 2082 by Assemblymember Atkins, the State Lands Commission had a more successful run with their administrative penalties bill than the Coastal Commission did. I think it was noteworthy that this is a bill that not only gives the State Lands Commission administrative penalty authority, but also by implication allows them to create for the first time in their history an actual enforcement program for State Lands Commission. We're very happy for our sister agency. We're actually, we've scheduled a meeting to meet with Curtis Fossum, their unfortunately retiring executive director, and their chief counsel to sort of impart some of the lessons learned from the Coastal Commission's enforcement program to them as they set theirs up. It is noteworthy, I have to bring up the fact that that bill made it through with almost no opposition whatsoever, whereas the commission's administrative penalty bill couldn't even get out of its first house. It's just a little window into the differing politics between the Coastal Commission and some of our other state agencies, even our sister agencies in Sacramento. So, good job, State Lands Commission and Assemblymember Atkins, for bringing that one home. SB 71 by Senator Leno is the only change to the actual Coastal Act in this year's legislative session, and that was a broad-ranging bill that actually implemented a governor's executive order for state agencies to eliminate unnecessary reports. There is one report in that bill that was a requirement of the Coastal Commission. It was our annual report to the legislature on the status of public access offers to dedicate. That was basically an obsolete reporting requirement at this point because it was something that had been required several years ago pursuant to a legislative analyst report that highlighted the fact that the commission did not have an adequate data tracking system in place to actually track when our offers to dedicate would be expiring. That has been rectified. We have a greatly improved data tracking system relative to OTDs and permits and other items in general, and so that's going to free up a little bit of time on coastal staff and that we will no longer have to be preparing and circulating that report. The last chaptered bill that I want to bring to your attention is SB 1066 by Senator Liu. The commission did have a support position on that bill, and that's the bill that authorized the Coastal Conservancy to fund and undertake projects related to climate change. We did have a little bit of discussion with the commission before we took a support position on that bill as to whether or not that would actually be helpful to the Coastal Conservancy. Apparently it either was or it at least didn't cause any harm, and so the Conservancy will be undertaking the consideration of those types of projects from now on into the future. I did, before I close the legislative report, I did want to note that Senator Kehoe had planned to actually come to the commission meeting today to present you with a framed official copy of her resolution, her Senate Concurrent Resolution 84. That is the resolution that has created California Coastal Protection Week and designated the second week of September every year as the lead up to Coastal Cleanup Day as to be California Coastal Protection Week for the purpose of bringing more public attention and awareness to the importance of coastal protection and the work that this commission does. Because we had a shortened hearing time today, Senator Kehoe was not able to adjust her schedule to make it in time. So she's going to be showing up tomorrow to present the commission with her resolution, which was an outgrowth of a conversation that Director Lester and I had with her at the beginning of the year. And it was done partially in acknowledgement of the 40th anniversary of the passage of Prop 20 and also with the passage of former Executive Director Peter Douglas. So you could be looking forward to her presentation of that resolution to you in the morning session tomorrow. Unless there are any questions, that concludes the Legislative Director's report.
Thank you. Commissioner Zimmer.
Yes, I had a couple of questions. On that, the Global Warming Act and the potential for funding local LCP amendments, is there a potential for the funding of our commission's review of those amendments also contemplated in that conversation?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is it's going to depend, but yes, that's within the universe of what is going to be on the table for discussion to be funded.
Okay, that's good. And then with reference to the penalty legislation that was adopted for state lands, I was interested in your comment, and I think that maybe this presents an opportunity for education on our part, because noticing that the state lands legislation provides for a penalty of up to $1,000 per day, but the potential under the Coastal Act legislation was for $50,000 per violation. Just based on reactions to that proposed legislation in my community, I think that there's a lack of understanding of exactly how these penalties might work or be administered, and that has generated a lot of fear and therefore opposition among folks that may otherwise understand the critical need for additional enforcement tools for our staff. So I just wanted to put that out there.
If I may respond, I would agree with you, and I think the inverse is also true. I think the opposition to the bill
created a lot of misunderstanding in that there were interest groups and entities who opposed the admin penalty bill, who created all kinds of, I just have to say, ridiculous scare tactic scenarios that led to such a sturm and drang about the bill that people stopped listening to what it actually did and what it was meant to address. And that's unfortunate.
Okay. I would want to reiterate that I think that this does present an opportunity for us to clear up any misconceptions that have arisen.
And we would agree.
And then the third comment question is, I noticed that there was a Senate bill that has been chaptered that now authorizes ex partes for the state and regional water boards, and it was interesting to me that the obligation to do the reporting was on the interested party rather than on the board members. My question doesn't have to be answered today, but for council might be whether there's anything in the development of that legislation that would help us figure out what the appropriate scope of our contacts and conversations should be. Thanks.
Okay. Point well taken. Thank you. And I just want to take this opportunity, first of all, to say, Sarah Christie, it's good to see you back. Looking so healthy, a big smile on your face. For those of you who don't know, Sarah had a pretty bad accident a couple of months ago. It had taken quite some time to come back, and it's always a bad time to have a terrible accident and a life-threatening accident. But to sound a little hard-hearted, the worst time is right at the end of session when you're our legislative liaison. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank our sister agencies who stepped up in a big way. State Lands Commission, BCDC, and the Coastal Conservancy staff took on the role of watching for legislation. You all know, have heard, some of you have experienced that last week, 10 days in session, you know, the stuff that happens at 2 in the morning. It's, you have to be on the ground. You need to be there when it happens. And we had an army filling in for Sarah Christie, as well as the agencies I've mentioned. I know that staff in the Speaker's office, in the Pro Tem's office, and in the Policy Committee. So I found that quite heartwarming, and I want to thank them. And it's a reflection, I think, of how they feel about us and our program. It's also a real reflection of how they feel about our legislative liaison, that it was, she was out and they were there. So I just wanted to thank them for that. And again, most important, I'm glad you're back. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Schellenberger, Chair Schellenberger. I actually thought it went so well, I'm considering taking August off every year for the rest of my time here.
No, bad idea.
Thank you for saying that, Madam Chair. You are right that there was no hesitation at all on any of our partners to step up. They did so immediately, and I think that is a reflection of the relationships that Sarah's built in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I have three items left. Two of them are agendized here for action. Item 25B is an audio and video streaming services contract for our commission meetings. This is asking for commission authorization for the executive director to enter into a contract for these services and the web streaming broadcast for future commission meetings. There is a motion in order to accomplish that in the report, and this would allow us to continue to contract for those web services that have become, you know, critical and central to how we're getting our work out to the public.
All right. Are there any ex partes on this? Has Billy been doing its job? No. Seeing none.
So
Commissioner
moved.
Brennan. Oh, sorry. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission authorize the executive director to enter into a contract for an amount not to exceed $160,000 to provide audio, visual, and internet live web streaming and archival services for 1 year beginning January 1st, 2013, with an option to extend the contract for an additional 5-month period if the audio, visual soundtrack has more reggae in it, in accordance with the Department of General Services instructions. And recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I think I just did.
Commissioner Kinsey. Okay. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote on this? Seeing none, you're on again. Thank you very much. Good job.
Okay, I assume that you're delegating to me which reggae.
Yes.
This item 25C is an interagency agreement and a subvention contract. This is asking for commission authorization to have us enter into an agreement with California Emergency Management Agency to accept $50,000 in federal funds from NOAA to address marine debris from the 2011 tsunami, Japanese tsunami, and to pass those funds through the State Parks Foundation, which is how we typically handle funds for our coastal cleanup work. So this would authorize us to accept the money from NOAA through CalEMA and then allow us to pass it through to the State Parks Foundation to pay us to do coastal cleanup work. And it's $50,000, and it would be essentially used to structure more cleanups over the following year and put in place systematic data collection around potential tsunami debris.
All right, any ex partes? Seeing none, Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the agenda item as stated by our executive director and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Only briefly, I think the idea of the data collection, I think, is important, and I'm glad to see that at least getting on the radar. While this is a small amount of money, we all know that the debris cleanup and things like that are going to be massive amounts on both local and state agencies. But this is a step in the right direction, at least to see some funding put toward that. Thank you.
Commissioner Kinsey, any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the contract.
The last thing I wanted to report on was simply to update you on the workshop that we discussed briefly earlier today with local government, that we are planning to do this in December. We've targeted the first day of the meeting, the Wednesday morning, to have that workshop. The format would be along the lines of about a four-hour time period, 8:30 to 12:30 or so, perhaps a slightly earlier start and then running into the lunch hour. But as I mentioned previously, the format would be similar to 2009, where you as commissioners would be assembled around a table with 12 local officials who have been involved in this dialogue with us from CSAC, through CSAC and the League, as representing the counties and the cities that are involved with coastal issues. And it would be a dialogue, facilitated dialogue, looking at issues of the LCP amendment process primarily. And we are in the process of refining the topical focus of that discussion with the League and CSAC, but I wanted to just put that on your radar and see if there was any input or feedback concern about that at this time. Everyone's looking forward to it, and as I mentioned earlier, we are anticipating that the focus of the discussion would be how to move us, keep us moving forward with some of the issues we've identified and specific ways to deal with that. But the origins of this really do go back to the interest expressed by the League of Cities originally on establishing a more direct conversation between you as officials with local officials. So to have that part of the dialogue happen as well and hear have an opportunity for you to share and express your concerns with each other about these kinds of questions. So that's the update, and I'm happy to hear any feedback or interest in how that might go.
Okay, Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Charles, thanks for the report. I've stayed off it. I was on the Coastal Cities Group prior to getting on this board, and I've separated myself from that. But in the reaction I'm getting, there's been nothing but compliments in regards to the opportunities and the items that have been put on the table, and realizing that staff is under a lot of constraints, but really working hard to get this on, to make it a real, something that's worthwhile for those people who travel to San Francisco and really feel that they have an ownership and partnership in this, and it's not kind of being dictated to them. So I want to make sure you pass that on to the staff that's being involved. It's really helping. And I think the idea, though, the the framework that's been put in place, and the items are looking very appropriate to local coastal issues. So, and I did wanted to continue, if I could, and ask a quick question. A lot of great feedback on State Coastal Cleanup Day. One of the great questions I had asked was on the artwork, on the posters. And I'm wondering, it kind of disappeared from our website, and I'm wondering if people wanted to know where they could possibly get that. Those posters. I know it's not a probably in your arena, but I just wanted to pass on that if it's available or a link to it, it was very well received by a number of folks. So,
let me follow up with that. Maybe I can report back tomorrow on how we can do that.
Great. And then I just wanted to also ask you a quick question. I'm sitting on a panel and. Has the commission, maybe you could direct me, Charles, to this commission over time, I think, has come out in terms of sustainable fisheries and local waters, and if there's any white paper the commission's done over the past? Or under the constraints of doing LCPs and everything else, I wouldn't understand why there wouldn't be, but I was just I guess I could do that offline, but I just wanted to respect that. I think it's certainly coming into the forefront more when we're talking about locally sourced products. All of a sudden, especially in coastal cities, they're asking, well, gee, what about our coastal waters and the fisheries and things along that line? So,
I can't think of a specific report that we may have done. I can check with Allison later today and again update you tomorrow. But, you know, short of our participation in the MPA process over the last several years and in designating MPAs and in as much as those contribute to a sustainable fishery, that's the kind of involvement we have taken in that issue to date.
That's perfect. I'll take that lead and go from there. And Madam Chair, just want to quickly, I did have the opportunity to attend America's Cup this last weekend in San Francisco, and I did want to say that we're fortunate to the partnership, I think, of the County of San Francisco in regards to the water quality issues, and you mentioned, Sarah mentioned just a little bit of legislation to allow some of those yachts to come in place. I think it's not kind of carving something out. They're zero waste events. They have a huge displays in regards to ocean water quality. They had a huge jumbotron with a lot of the folks on the different sailing teams speaking about getting rid of single-use plastic bags, sustainable fisheries, and plastic bottles around the ocean. And all of them had personal stories they were telling as sailors going around the world, and as they do, of what they're seeing out in the ocean. So I think it was a huge message that's being sent out, and I think while we're not so involved, it certainly is nice to know that message that this body in the Coastal Act is being carried forward by other bodies. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we have one speaker slip for public comment. Oh, sorry, are you done?
I just wanted to mention, I don't recall whether it was mentioned earlier this morning, that we did try to put together a field trip for this afternoon, but that is not going to happen. We were not able to get the logistics to work out with the city of Encinitas, and as was mentioned, you know, we often can't control what happens to the agenda after we've been required to set it up, and we were anticipating the PG&E item to take a large portion of today, but due to their postponement, it's not. We'll enjoy that next month, probably. So that's why we have this open afternoon. And the last thing is that we do anticipate a closed session, a short closed session, and if you'd like to have it today to make tomorrow shorter, then that would be advisable.
Yeah. Let's take the public comment, and then we'll go into closed session. And is it all right if we report out in the morning from closed session? Okay.
Yes, we will do that.
All right. Thank you. Leah Renee.
Hi. So, please excuse me. This is my first time ever speaking in front of anyone. So if I'm stuttering,
take a really deep breath because we're all very friendly up
Thank
here.
Thank you. I hope I remind you of all of your very first time doing this because I'm an extremely private person. I never come out from anything. If you look me up, I just don't understand how come Google can put all of our backgrounds. But anyway, moving right past that, not to, because I didn't know if I was going to walk into this today. I actually thought I was going to go into a classroom, and I brought a television set and an extension cord. But sitting here this morning, I realized how important it was that us citizens had a voice. Because I don't think we know we have a voice anymore. So I'm going to break my privacy and talk to all of you about something that's really important in 2 minutes or less. I saved my whole life for the American dream, and I have a house that I love. And I don't understand the stock market, and I don't understand anything, but I understand the Santa Monica, California dream. I understand what land means. I'm fourth or fifth generation Californian. I'm going to move right past it. Can you get my pictures up on there? Okay. Bottom line is, my neighbor got an exemption from you for a 744-square-foot addition to their house. The neighbors in the vicinity aren't here today because they feel like their voices don't count. They've all been before you before, and it didn't matter. So I came here alone. So here's their exemption letter from March 4th, 2010 for 283 Trino Way. That's what we all knew that was going to be built. On November 28th, actually, I brought you guys, you all have my, great. So on number, 1 minute or less. November 28th, 2011, the architect and the homeowner asked if they could revise their house to a 4,500 square foot house. And you guys went back and said, not exempt, need a coastal permit. Am I too close, too far? Sorry. On January 20th, 2012, after reviewing their application that none of us neighbors knew about, you gave them a de minimis waiver of the coastal permit. This application says that they're not demolishing their house, that they have 9,700 square feet of property. And I could go on and on and on, but not to bore you with the 14 seconds I have left, here's your geology report that shows that this property is on an ancient landslide. You don't even have a request for the geology. I'm spending tens and tens of thousands of dollars with surveyors, geological engineers, and I need help. And I need somebody to point me in the right direction, because I've been to the top of the Los Angeles Department of Building Safety. I've been to your Long Beach. I've been on September 25th, October 5th. I've got a chronology of working from 6 in the morning until 7 p.m. at night, and then I go home and I work.
Your time is up, and I suggest when our hearing closes that you speak with staff. You ask to be pointed in the right direction.
I appreciate that.
I don't know what it is, but they'll be sure to point you there. Thank you.
I'm grateful for your time. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you. With that, I have no other speaker slips. We'll go into a closed session. And for those in the audience, we will reconvene in the morning at 9 o'clock when we report out closed session. Thank you.